Hello and welcome to the Empathy Mining Podcast. What'd you think of that intro song? Brand new. Yeah, I was playing around on my GarageBand app and decided to experiment with a few little ditties for an intro, and I also made another one that might be the outro music for the podcast now. Had fun doing it. And while I was at it, I also set to music a poem I had written a few weeks ago about the Trail of Tears. And that's going to be featured in today's episode of the Empathy Mining Podcast. So we're going to make that the topic. This podcast is the Trail of Tears, Indian removal, and Andrew Jackson in general. Jackson ranks very, very low on my list of presidents, perhaps right at the bottom. Not a big fan of our current president, obviously, but if there's anyone below him on my list, it would be Andrew Jackson. It's just maybe not a coincidence that Donald Trump chose to place a portrait of Andrew Jackson next to his desk in the Oval Office. Yeah. That raised my eyebrows when he did that. Anyway, let's talk about Jackson a little bit today and the biggest stain on his legacy, which was the Indian removal and the way he handled it. So, Jackson clearly did what he wanted to do. There's a lot of things to admire about Jackson as far as his person and the way he grew up and what he made of himself. Jackson, of all of our presidents, no doubt had the most horrible childhood of any. He was basically on his own in the world without any family by the time he was a young teen. He had been used as a messenger in the Revolutionary War. He was captured by the British. Famously, stubborn little Andy took a sword slash across the hand and face by a British officer who had asked him to polish his boots, and little Andy refused, an early sign of the kind of stubborn personality he was going to have. And he bore the scars from that little stubborn streak the rest of his life. But his mother, he never knew his father. Father died before Andy was born. His mother and brothers died during the Revolutionary War, so he was off and running wild, basically, by the time he was about 13, 14 years old, and fell into some rough crowds, got into the gambling and the carousing and fighting and all of that. Basically became a really tough, hard-nosed kind of a street kid before he hit his adulthood and started to pursue more adult and dignified pursuits. He became a lawyer and eventually found his way into politics as a senator from Tennessee. And he became a war hero during the War of 1812. Say what you will about Andrew Jackson, but he was a pretty successful general in leading the troops that he was in command of, even though sometimes he was known to go rogue and do things without permission. His success rate was very admirable, if body counts are the things that we should admire. But I guess in war, that's the case. So we're going to talk more about Andrew Jackson in just a minute, but first let's pause here for a brief word from our sponsor. All right, back to Andrew Jackson. So Jackson was very unique among our presidents. Because of his personality, his stubbornness, his toughness,
The man wasn't particularly large. He was kind of tall for his time, over 6 feet tall, probably 6'1", somewhere in there. But he weighed maybe 140, very skinny. But he didn't back away from anybody. And oftentimes that manifests itself in the form of duels. So Jackson's legendary for his dueling history. He fought in quite a few duels. Nobody knows for sure the right number, but those kind of things weren't exactly recorded. But it was a lot. And he was shot in at least a couple of those that we know about. Most duels of the time were designed to be pretty much bloodless. They were just two guys showing how big men they were by squaring off, and then they'd kind of agree to miss on purpose or fire into the air. They'd walk off with their dignity intact, and they defended their honor or the honor of whoever they were defending. And that's the way most duels were, but Jackson got into some real ones, and he was shot in the upper arm or shoulder area at one point, and the doctors actually recommended that the arm be amputated, but Jackson wouldn't allow that, and continued to carry fragments of those bullets in his shoulder. And then the most famous duel was with Charles Dickinson, who was not a person with whom you'd want to pick a gunfight, because he was known to be the best shot in Tennessee. And this duel was not going to be bloodless the way they set it up. It was Andrew Jackson defending the honor of his wife, Rachel, who their marriage had a bit of a technicality involved with it, where her first husband had not completed the divorce proceedings. And she married Andrew Jackson before she was officially divorced, making her technically guilty of bigamy. And, of course, that was a big scandal in the 1820s and 30s. So Jackson, who was a man who had a lot of enemies because of his personality, was always fighting off this scurrilous talk about him and his marriage to Rachel, and he was quick to jump to her defense. And that's what happened with Charles Dickinson. And in that duel, Dickinson got off the shot and hit Andrew Jackson squarely in the center of the chest, but Jackson had twisted just a little bit, and the bullet missed his heart. It shattered his sternum, punctured a lung, and the bullet fragments settled just within about an inch of Andrew Jackson's heart. And Andrew Jackson, being the almost superhuman-like toughness that he contained, wouldn't even give Charles Dickinson the satisfaction of falling down. He took it a direct hit in the chest and barely flinched and continued to raise his pistol so that he could shoot back at Charles Dickinson. And when he did, the gun misfired. So he calmly recocked his weapon and shot Charles Dickinson through the gut. And Dickinson fell instantly, screaming in pain. Jackson never let Charles Dickinson have the satisfaction of knowing that he'd hit him, was led off the field by his second, who was a surgeon, and they rode off back towards Tennessee, back towards Nashville, while Charles Dickinson was screaming in the background. As they rode off and they got out of sight of the dueling field, the second for Andrew Jackson looked down and noticed blood sloshing out of Jackson's boot. And he said, "Have you been hit, General?" And Andrew Jackson said, "Oh, I believe he might have pinged me a little." And then he fell off his horse. And Jackson was in bed for over a month recovering, and he probably never fully recovered, and he carried those bullet fragments in his chest for the rest of his life, which was nearly 40 more years. Charles Dickinson, by the way, was carried to a nearby cabin wherein he bled through two mattresses and suffered horribly until he died later that night. So that's just a story. I love to tell that story to my eighth graders because they eat that story up, and really gets them hooked on learning about Andrew Jackson. But there's a much darker side to the legacy of Andrew Jackson. And at the top of that list is his plan for Indian removal. By the time Jackson became president in the 1830s, there were really only a scant few of the Native American tribes that once lived in the East remaining. And there were mostly in the American Southeast, Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, down through there. They were called the five civilized tribes: the Cherokee, Chickasaw, Choctaw, Seminole, and Creek. They had wonderful cultures, advanced civilizations. The Cherokee, for instance, had their own government system, their own newspaper, schools, and were really thriving as a sovereign nation within the boundaries of the United States, as were the other civilized tribes. They actually sued for their right to remain, and the Supreme Court ruled in the favor of the Native Americans, saying yes, they had the right to remain as a sovereign nation within the boundaries of the United States. But then gold was discovered in Georgia, and the whites wanted that land, and Andrew Jackson wanted that land. And Jackson pursued the Indian removal policy as if nothing happened at the Supreme Court level. His famous quote, at least paraphrased quote, was, "Chief Justice John Marshall has made his decision. Now let him enforce it." Basically saying, what's he going to do about it? So Jackson went directly against the Constitution, and as Andrew Jackson was wont to do, he did his own thing just as he wanted to. And that led directly to the Trail of Tears. Although Andrew Jackson was out of office before the official Trail of Tears began, it was his baby, make no mistake about it. The rest is history, and it is among the darkest chapters in American history, right alongside the slavery story and others. So, with that in mind, a few weeks ago I wrote a poem about this. I called it The Place Where They Cried, and I want to read that poem to you, and then I'll play you the song that I wrote to those words, and hope you'll enjoy it. So here is the poem, the original poem. I am the place where they cried. That sad march left their scars upon me. Many lifeless bodies were left by my side. The bones yet remain, but their spirits are free. Five civilized tribes on the run. The land of the free treated them this way. Prodded like sheep by the soldiers' guns. Forced from their lands without delay. The Supreme Court ruled they could stay. To remain an island sovereign within a foreign ocean. But Jackson cared not and still had his way. Constitution be damned, his plan set in motion. The Cherokee roses grow where their teardrops fall. Cherokee roses grow where their teardrops fell, marking the trail where their bones reside. Others live through the hell, robbed of their land, dignity, and pride. Forced to a place no one wanted to live, to spend out their days pining for home. A wonderful race with so much to give, reduced to hollow shells who aimlessly roam. All this done in the name of their God, these American settlers claimed their right to remove godless red savages from their sod so the whites could live on in their divine light. Their Bibles should have taught them better, but greed got in the way of the truth. If only they'd read the red letters, they'd have seen their sins with this proof. Cherokee, Chickasaw, Choctaw, Seminole, and Creek, proud nations swallowed up and devoured by greed, of a nation that offers freedom for all to seek, but continually falls short of living its creed. I'm the place where they cried. My markers now acknowledge this trail of tears. Hundreds of treaties were nothing but lies, all slowly forgotten with the passing of years. So, as I was playing around recording intro and outro music, it came to me that maybe I could play around and come up with a song to set the words of that poem to. And lo and behold, I did it. I don't claim to be a singer. I've always been able to sing a little bit and sang harmony and sang in some quartets and things like that, but I never was one to, you know, take the lead front and center and sing. But in the privacy of my little closet at home, I got up the bravery to do it. I wrote the music and put it together, and I thought it kind of worked very well with the theme, so I got up the bravery to share it. So what follows is the song, The Place Where They Cried. I hope you enjoy it. If you like it, you can find it on YouTube and share it with your friends if you like. So that will do it for this episode. I'm going to close out with that song, and then there'll be a little outro song, like I had the intro song. And I'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Empathy Mining Podcast. By the way, there's one thing I forgot to mention that I meant to mention, and it's actually going to be referenced in the title of this podcast. And it's kind of a jaw dropper if you don't know it. Adolf Hitler wrote in his writings about how he was inspired by Andrew Jackson's Indian removal policy and modeled much of his Jewish removal policy after that of Andrew Jackson. So Andrew Jackson was a role model for Adolf Hitler, if that doesn't speak volumes. That's why when I saw the portrait of Andrew Jackson next to Donald Trump's desk in the Oval Office, it was so disappointing. I'm not sure Donald Trump fully understands the history he's promoting there. But be that as it may, on with the song.
I am the place where they cried. Sad march left their scars upon me. Many lifeless bodies were left by my side. The bones yet remain, but their spirits are free. Yes, their spirits are free. side. Others live through the hell, robbed of their land. This done in the name of their God, these American settlers claim their right to remove godless red savages from their sod, so the whites could live in their divine light. Their Bible should have taught them better, but greed got in the way of the truth. If only they'd read the red letters, they'd have seen their sins with this proof. Choctaw, Seminole, and Creek, proud nation swallowed up and devoured by greed, of a nation that offers freedom for all to seek, but continually falls short of living up to its creed. I am the place where they cry. My markers now acknowledge this trail of tears. Hundreds of treaties were nothing but lies, all slowly forgotten with the passing of the years. Yes.
Into the empathy mind, into the empathy mind, into the